Hello everyone, my name is Sheikh Hussein and you are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph's Campus Community Radio. So do have a nice day.
You're listening to WINGS, the Women's International News Gathering Service, produced at the University of Ottawa. Stay tuned to CFRU 93.3 FM.
In July 2011, nearly 2,000 women converged on Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, for a week-long conference called Women's Worlds. The delegates had widely varying interests and information to convey. I'm Frieda Worden. Today you'll hear my first full-length interview at the conference. It was with Emet Dikirmenci, a women and development specialist from Turkey, who lovingly carries women's sustainable agricultural knowledge from community to community around the world.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
My name is Emet Dikirmenci. I'm originally from Turkey, living in Seattle for 2 years now. Before that, I have lived in Australia and New Zealand about 11 years. I do research about gender and development. I teach permaculture. I'm a permaculture designer and teacher and consultant. So I'm here at Ottawa to present my research about women seed saving and land control men's control over women through agriculture.
Does development interfere with women's seed saving?
Definitely. It interferes because since the hunter-gatherer society, women were always a gatherer. They have knowledge and deep knowledge and skills about the land, how to grow food and how to preserve seeds and how to pass seeds from generations to generations. But at the same time, women in most countries, even they do produce 80% of the food comes through women's effort. They are not owning the land. They are under men's control.
So women do a lot of farming in Turkey?
Yes, it's getting less and less through the westernization and agribusinesses now, but still in countryside, women do farming even more than 15 hours in summertime. They are on the field and they are working with their crops and tobacco farms and cotton farms, corn farms. Yeah, women do a lot of agriculture in Turkey.
Are there rituals around women's seed saving in Turkey?
Yes. In Turkey, shamanic culture is still alive. So seed saving has a lot of rituals. For example, women gave seeds to young girls before they get married to carry that seed with them to their new land, new home. It means the young girl never will feel hunger if they have seeds. So this sort of seed saving from generations to generations, from my grandmother, for example, seed were really a great spiritual connection for the generations. They do gather seeds collectively. Collective farming is still happening in Turkey. It's not dead yet. They do, for example, crop harvesting one day at your farm, next week at a neighbor's farm. So seed exchange is really big, but we are losing that sort of things through the globalization. Now radical groups are creating autonomous seed saving groups. People are so generous to give, to share the seeds. Even they don't ask any return. They just open, this is my seed from our land this year. This is extra. I would like to share whoever wants.
So agribusiness is disrupting that. In what way?
Agribusiness is disrupting because small farmers, family farms are disappearing. Big farm owners, some of them are organic farmers from, for example, Israel, from Holland, from Germany, from Britain. They are buying big land. I mean, they do offer some money. If you sell your 10-acre land to me, I can give this money. For poor villagers, it's a big money. They are already struggling to pay their credits to the banks and for the fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides. They are owing a big debt to the banks. Western agribusiness peoples offer shiny at their eyes. They do accept that money. They do sell the land and they lose their connection with the land. So displacement through this way, it's happening really fast in Turkey now. But at my age, people are living in cities, but their crops are coming from the village there because older generations are keeping the connection with the land. So if I sell my land, still I can get some crop through my mother. So people are not realizing that this is a big disconnection to sell the land. So small farmers can't survive under economic globalization. So they don't have any choices in their own eye, but we need to create radical options.
So you said that the small farmers can't survive under globalization, and that's because they get into debt for buying fertilizer and things like that. Could they survive if they use a different type of farming?
Yes, definitely. For example, I have mentioned collective farming in Turkey. Collectivity is really in our culture. So we shouldn't lose this sort of collective mind. Co-ops, for example, co-ops structures are under control by the government or the state, but still they can get together to create a co-op or union. There are some farmers' union now. That sort of movement is really getting strong in Turkey. So if they are building their own co-ops, they can do organic farming. I'm teaching permaculture, which means low-tech, autonomous way of producing your own food. I do teach for small farmers or homeowners to become self-sufficient through just low-tech. They don't need to buy expensive things, just create their own sustainability through recycling. Mm. This is possible at farming scale as well.
What is permaculture?
Permaculture is permanent agriculture, the word meaning, but it's beyond growing organic food and organic farming. It involves shelter, organic shelter, building eco house or passive solar house, rainwater harvesting, gray water reusing. It involves how to keep water in the land as well. Water issue is becoming really big. Even in Turkey, privatization through water, it's a big issue. More than 2,000 privatization for our creeks and rivers. It's really scary. Reality in Turkey now. So people need to survive how to become self-sufficient through water as well. Yeah.
You're listening to a Wings interview with Emmet Dekirmenci from Turkey. Emmet teaches sustainable agriculture, combining modern permacultural methods and women's agricultural traditions.
Land usage, for example, sustainable way of land usage we are teaching through indigenous inspiration. People of Turkey, they are quite collectively minded. Before we are losing this sort of connection, I'm taking responsibility to be a bridge person, to spread the knowledge what I'm gaining from Western world. Permaculture, I'm going to mix with our own cultural roots and creating ecological restoration, I call it. So community building, alternative ecologic economy, I do call it. It includes gift giving, which is very suitable to Turkish culture or Kurdish culture in Turkey. Kurdish people is the biggest majority. I can't say all Turkish. There are some other ethnicities in Turkey too. But we have lost a lot of connection with our authenticity and connection with the land, connection between each other. Permaculture brings integrity back to the land, to the people. I call it ecological restoration because we need that sort of restoration in our life, in our land, in our communities.
So ecological restoration means putting things into relationship with each other?
Yes, in permaculture, interrelationship is so important between each element. For example, one element will be serving more than one function. When we put one element in our design, we consider how many functions it has. It should have at least three functions. For example, if we take energy as an example, in this centralized world, if earthquake happens, Turkey is prone to earthquakes. What will happen to centralized energy systems? So we are trying to bring solar oven, very common in our teaching system. Turkey is rich, solar-rich country. They can cook their own food and they can, solar shower. It's very easy through composting. So more than one energy resources we put in our design. Same with other elements. We consider more than function, more than one integrity in each element in our designs.
How did you find out about permaculture?
Actually, I took my first permaculture in Turkey. Yeah, it was during an UN conference, Habitat. It was happening in Turkey. An Australian permaculturist, his name is Max Lindegger, one of the leading person in permaculture movement. He is the editor of Permaculture International. He came to the conference. And we have asked him whether he can deliver a teaching in Turkey. And I took one of his first course in Turkey, and I got my first certification. And then moved to Australia. I have been involved in to the similar groups. And in New Zealand, I have developed my own project, community-based project for refugee and migrant women, sustainability through permaculture principles. It's called Innermost Gardens now, innermostgardens.org. It's a really nice project. It's up and running with Maori integrity in New Zealand, capital city of Wellington.
Now, when you said the name, was it Enormous Gardens or Innermost?
Innermost Gardens. Innermost Gardens. Because as a minority in dominant culture, I was feeling lack of expression. So we have thought that expression of innermost people from refugee background or people come to Aotearoa, New Zealand, Niamh. This is the space. They come and express your voice and express your ideas, how you were growing your food in your own country, how the herbs were used in your cooking. We have created a design for five different continents. Women from five different continents, they were bringing herbs and plants how to use. Actually, in New Zealand, when I was promoting that project, some people, you are going to bring your exotic seeds to destroy our native environment. Some of them said that. I know we have native ecologists. I mean, we were working with Maori people as well. So first people in this land, they know the native ecologists, so we have connection with them. Don't worry. So that project is really up and going well. It's an educational space for school groups, and women are leading the project.
You're listening to Wings, the Women's International News Gathering Service, produced at the University of Ottawa. Stay tuned to CFRU 93.3 FM.
So now in Seattle, are you going to do permaculture in Seattle?
Yes, I'm teaching permaculture in Seattle. I was living on Vashon Island. It's quite nice artistic creation there. I have offered two certification courses and a couple of weekend courses. People are really taking, that sort of education. I always bring cultural roots because Western way of teaching is lacking in my mind. For example, at my courses, food blessing is one of the big component. Connection through food in my culture, it's really big. When I was living in Aotearoa, New Zealand, how Maori people were blessing the food, it was really inspiring to me. How do they thank to the water, to the mountain, to the wind? So I'm encouraging people, who has brought this food on table, from what sort of land and in what sort of conditions? So can you share this story if you bring a little food on the table? So it's really, I'm into bringing that sort of cultural connection as well, not only Western way of permaculture, I mean.
So the blessing is like the farming. It has to be aware of all the elements that go into making the food.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, blessing in different culture, I mean, especially in Maori culture, I know they do include community aspect in blessings. They do include land usage and acknowledging people who have prepared that food. For example, hangi is cooked before the sun rises in the morning, traditional way of cooking hangi under the earth, in earth oven underground in between the rocks. It's so inspirational food to me to share that story when I'm eating hangi.
What is hangi?
Hangi in Maori culture, it's corn, sweet potato, big sweet potato, and some people call it yam in the United States, but in Australia it's called sweet potato. But in Maori, they have brown, purple, black sort of different potatoes. They do use different potatoes. They do use meat if you are eating meat, and squashes, pumpkins, and it's wrapped with mostly banana leaves, but you can use corn leaves as well. You can use any big leaves. It absorbs the delicious taste of different juices together overnight under the ground, and other day it will be serving to the people warm.
Well, it sounds kind of like tamales with corn on the outside.
It's similar to tamales, yes. But it's bigger than tamales. One person can be fed with hangi. It's a big package. Oh. Tamales and small. Definitely, there are some connection with tamales and hangis. It's similar,
So it's maybe a natural style of cooking to cook inside a leaf and
producing any carbon footprint. This is so important to me. Our ecological footprint is so big. How to reduce our ecological footprint through feeding our community. So this is the natural way of feeding our community and not leaving any waste in the land.
By cooking it underground, you don't lose the heat? When you're cooking the hangi.
Native people know how to create the fire. And small branches, dry branches, or dry leaves can start the fire, and then you can start putting another layer, and then big logs, And the stones, how American Native people make sweet lodges. They heat the rocks, and you can keep the heat through the rocks.
So, okay, so it is a small fire, but then complete use of the heat so that you don't lose it into the air or,
yes,
or anything like that.
Yes, ah. Yeah. And then cover with dirt to cook.
Yeah. I guess a lot of cultures have that. In Hawaii, they cook in a pit. Mm-hmm. In North Carolina, in the U.S., where mm-hmm. I grew up, they cook in a pit.
Mm-hmm.
It's called pit barbecue, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a pit cooking.
It's similar, yeah. There's some similarities, mm-hmm. definitely. Spiritual connection is a bit, spiritual ceremonies around the food may be different.
Yes.
But definitely yeah. there are some similarities.
Uh-huh. So there's this not kind of knowledge is all kinds of places, and you're helping people to bring it together and create or recreate things that probably all our common ancestors used.
Yes, yeah, I'm really finding this joy, connection through the food, and I'm learning at the same time. I don't say I'm teaching. When I advertise my courses, I say I'm going to Turkey. It's my home country, but still lots of things to learn from local people. Because in Turkey, still we are great diversity. When you drive 5 kilometers away, the traditional dress is different. Local food is different. Cooking style is different. So under capitalist globalization, it's still, yeah, not everything we have lost. So I'm into bringing that things back. If how these things are so valuable, we should keep these ones. I have lived in many different countries now. I'm going back to my own land and to help them. Yeah, yeah.
So you're planning to go back to Turkey soon?
Yes, I'm going to Turkey soon after this conference. I'm going to teach and learn at 4 different places, 4 different small villages, and with the people on the ground.
I'm Frieda Worden. You're listening to my interview with Emmett Digger Menchie from Turkey, who has been teaching permaculture courses in New Zealand and the U.S. We were talking on the first day of the Women's Worlds Conference in Ottawa, Canada, in July 2011.
So, Turkey used to have an empire.
Yeah, we are the sons, and I mean daughters and sons of Ottoman Empire. Yeah, and for 500 years.
So, do you think that many of the things that you have in Turkey might have come from other parts of the world and been brought there under the previous globalization?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we always, for example, we always say that we have connection with Balkans. We have connection with. So I have met a couple of women at this conference before the conference starts. A woman was saying, "My name comes from Turkish Nermin, Pakistani woman," and other women from Croatia. She was saying that my name is Jasmine, but call me Yasemin. It's a Turkish name because my parents named me through Turkish connection. Another lady from Syria, again, she was making little joke through connection. Yes, Ottoman Empire, yeah, I think people have brought that sort of diversity from their roots. We are now, yeah, if we are seeing that sort of connection, we should keep, and yeah, yeah, it's valuable.
And one more thing about Turkey is that you have the ruins still of huge agricultural, very stable agricultural societies that used to exist there.
Yeah, maybe you have heard Çatalhöyük. Yes. It is one of the first city life in the world, actually. More than 15,000 years ago, people were doing agriculture along the river, and they were having the knowledge how to store their grains. And Mesopotamia is the country where the wheat was born, I mean domesticated and spread all over the world, like corn is in Mexico. So that sort of agricultural roots are really deep. Under this globalization, still 80% of food produced in Turkey, we consume in Turkey. Privatization is a huge issue, but I'm not proud of that 80%. Turkey was one of the rare country to feed itself in late 80s, before neoliberalization. We were selling even wheats to the other countries. Now we are buying wheat from Canada. Can you believe it? Yeah, because lack of land and people are not really self-sufficient. Unfortunately, we are losing that agricultural roots.
So the agribusiness that comes to Turkey, are they growing things there to sell to the rest of the world? What are they selling?
Yes, they are. For example, wheat and vegetables, actually. They are concentrating on vegetables in Kurdish part. There are big dam projects, and they are producing vegetable for the European market, not for local people. Local people are the cheap labor. Even organic farmers from Europe, from Israel, they are buying big land to feed other parts of the world, and local people are getting hungry, which is the reality now.
I think that's very important to know. It could happen to anyone, anywhere, once you lose your own land base. And I think what you've started here, this movement, is very important all over the world.
Yes. People should aware of what's happening if they are selling their land. For example, they are dreaming, the villagers, and they are dreaming to put that money in your pocket and to provide education to their children in big cities. But it lasts only 5 years. After 5 years, they do realize, this is not our world. I have disconnected from my land, from my roots, and it creates social problems as well. So, disconnection from the land, it creates a huge problem, which is we are agrarian society. We are belong to the land.
And also having an education, as, for example, the Tunisian and the Egyptian people who became educated find out, having an education doesn't guarantee you a job where you can make a good living for your family and support them.
Yes, now in the U.S., we are saying that if you are knowing how to grow your own food, this is becoming one of the favorite occupation in future. This is the big skills now, where people reskilling themselves, how to grow food, how to become self-sufficient, how to create something from recycle. My grandmother was creating everything from recycled things. She was not throwing up even a simple plastic bottle. She was keeping everything to reuse. Now people are learning this skill again. So that sort of skill and knowledge is still alive in Turkey. Our people should be aware of what we are going to lose. In Western countries, we are trying to bring it back, but in my own country, I'm saying that this is valuable. This is the time to keep, to be aware of how to keep our own knowledge and skills.
Emet Degirmenci from Turkey. You can find out more about her multicultural permaculture design work at the website koruora.com. That's spelled KORUORA.com. To hear this program again, email wings@wings.org. Special thanks to your local radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of 36 Steps Toward a Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This